Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
All right, Thursday night. Woo! We made it through the week. For those of you that have a Monday through Friday week, hang in there. We're almost there. It's gonna be all right. But, you know, today's Thursday's the Friday when it's Loveline time. Question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is, dating would be so much easier if... Oh, that's opening the door. That's a little Pandora's box creeping open. Can't wait to hear what you all got to say about that one. My gosh. Also, tonight we're doing some couples therapy, so we got Rebecca Ishida coming in the house with us. We're going to be talking about some important stuff. Tonight, though, we're going to be talking about disparate desire. It's a big word. It's something we're all going to kind of bump into in some way, so stick around and learn more about that. And also, later in the show, we're going to be talking about some misconceptions around sex positivity. It's a positive term. It's important, but there's a lot of things that we need to kind of clear up around that one. That gets slung around and often very, very misunderstood. As always, phone lines are always open, 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. So give me a call, ask questions, hang out with me, whatever's on your mind. But right now, let's talk about a few things that are bouncing around in the news. So I love this one. The headline of this new study is dancing can reverse the signs of aging in the brain. I'm not mad at that. We talk a lot about the benefits of exercise, and people forget that what we're really saying when we talk about exercise is just that you got to move. Movement is what we're really talking about. Dancing is a powerful form of movement. So basically, older people who routinely partake in physical exercise, the studies show, can reverse the signs of aging in the brain, and dancing has the most profound effect. I love this. In a study, and I'm quoting, we showed that two different types of physical exercise, dancing and endurance training, both increase the area of the brain that declines with age. But in comparison of, they're saying, you know, the endurance training and dancing, it was only dancing that also led to noticeable behavioral changes in terms of improved balance. So we're looking now at basically the health of the brain and balance. I guess I have some questions about that one. I would think endurance training has to help with balance too, though. Like, you know, I got some questions about that one. But nonetheless, let's just leave it with dance more. It's good for your soul. It's good for your body. It's good for your brain. You know what I mean? We definitely do a lot of dancing here at Loveline. You sometimes can sneak some peeks of that on the IG. Also, Merriam-Webster, look, let me give a shout out to the editors of Merriam-Webster. Y'all are killing it. We were talking last week, or maybe it was this week. I think it was this week, about how they've now added they and them, right? Gender neutral terms to the dictionary. Which basically means it's now legit. No one can argue that that's not a real thing. It's in the dictionary. Well, they added something else that's really powerful. So those that are familiar with feminism, there's been something that we've talked about for, I think, let me think, 3 years, 3-5 years. It's called the Bechdel test. And basically that came from a comic book writer. But the Bechdel test was a way to really test if a TV show or a movie or any kind of storyline was really feminist or if it was still just promoting, you know, male-centricness. And the criteria used to evaluate fiction and film on the basis of its inclusion and representation of female characters. So there's basically three criteria that determine whether or not it passes the test, thereby making it more inclusive. And one is that it has to have at least 2 women in it. I mean, my goodness, imagine a movie or a TV show that doesn't have at least 2 women in it. Also, they have to talk to each other. That's number 2. So they have a relationship that's just the 2 of them. And 3, and the relationship doesn't have anything to do with a man. Where a lot of times the female characters, their whole storyline, their story arc is about their relationship to their husband, wife, or boyfriend, and the conversations are about that. And the Bechdel test is these 2 women have a life completely outside of something being related to their husbands or whatnot. So anyway, that's in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, so that kind of made that legit. For some people, you're like, what are you even talking about? I know. Also, this one excites my little plant-based vegan heart. and those that are also there. You can now, when Halloween comes around, I'm always waiting to see what's going to be this year's zinger, because the cultural zeitgeist will always get honored somehow with its own Halloween costume, right? Like during the election time, there was like Hillary masks. When Scream came out, Scream masks. Well, now you can be a sexy vegan Beyond Burger. Yes, thank you, thank you. Looking out for our environment. You got to Google and look at the picture. It's kind of ridiculous. And of course, it's this like, you know, quote unquote, sexy, like girl standing there with this like burger thing. And you're like, oh my God. But I love that it exists. And it's just a reflection of the fact that a lot of restaurants are now offering plant-based options. I mean, restaurants that you would be shocked about. I'm talking
McDonald's
is doing their own version. Yeah, although props to McDonald's, because like 20 years ago when I lived in Manhattan, the McDonald's near me did have a vegan burger. It was just a one-off. But they did. But I digress. But we have Taco Bell, Del Taco. Who else? I mean, there's a couple. I mean, my mind was blown. The list, Burger King. I mean, this is going endless. Subway. Everyone's going vegan. It's quite an interesting juggernaut where it's like fast and furious. So basically, we need to support it heavily, because that will make them continue to offer those selections and thereby help our environment.
Yeah, squeeze.
Thank you. Thank you. And finally, let's land with this one, because this is hilarious to me. So I love when a random tweet sent by the most random of all people goes viral. Someone who is a minor in Bible studies sent out a tweet basically just saying, homosexuality is not loving, she said. It's one person causing another person significantly body pain and torture. She goes on to say, because the male penis was never meant, I can't say this on air, but it was never meant to be used in a anal way, basically, and that there's a lot of health issues with that. So basically, that got a lot of people to respond back some of the most amazingly hilarious and funny things. Let's read some. Basically, Matt Lucas, who's a hilarious comedian from England, his response was just, well, I love it. And someone else said, straight people do butt stuff too, Karen, which is actually well said, right? It's not just the homos. Also, someone said, I can tell you the number of ways this is stupid, from it ignoring women completely, from its assumption that all gay men have anal sex, from its assumption that gay people get to choose, from thinking that straight people don't also do it. I love when these things go viral. It warms my little dark heart. All right, coming up next, we got couples therapy, and then we'll be sliding into the DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and it's Thursday night, so of course we're doing couples therapy. So we got Rebecca Ashida in the house with us, licensed therapist. What's going on?
Hi, how are you, Chris? I'm doing fine.
Oh, you know, living my life.
Yes.
Living my life. It's never dull here at Loveline. How are you?
I'm doing okay. A little tired.
Good. I believe you. So something I wanted to bring up that comes up in my office quite a bit is this whole concept of desire discrepancy. And for those that don't know what that means, it's basically just when there's two people in a relationship and they have very distinct sex drives. Mm-hmm. And what often happens, or what I see, is it terrorizes both of them, right? Because one of them is desperately just wanting to feel desire and they're wanting sex and sometimes they're initiating, and the other one is just not there, not as desirous, or not in the mood. And they're both terrorized because one just feels like, I'm alone, my partner doesn't want me. The other one's like, I want to want you, and I do, but I just don't necessarily feel sexual.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that happens a lot in therapy. And over time, it really causes huge rifts in the relationship. And then oftentimes sex becomes like a reward system.
Ooh,
you know,
yeah.
Like if you do something nice for me, then okay, then I'll give you it. Versus sex just being a part of a healthy relationship.
And how unfun does
That's
a reward
no
system work? On both sides, right?
right?
Imagine your sexuality being given to you because we're really good about helping out around the house.
Right.
That would feel
you wash the dishes.
Horrible. Or even having to give sex to someone because they wash the dishes.
Right.
And what kind of sex do you give to someone for washing dishes?
Missionary.
Missionary only.
Yeah,
you
missionary.
Have to work a little bit harder to get something a little kinkier, work your way up the ladder. But, you know, and unfortunately, I think that is how some couples' sex lives run.
Mm-hmm. No, they definitely do. And I always am so intrigued when someone comes in and you find out they haven't had sex, say, in 3 years.
Yes.
And it's like rewind. When
yes.
at what point did you not say to your partner, We haven't had sex this week. You know, like that the conversation just dies.
And there's like a length of time where it just gets a lot harder to get back to it, right? A couple weeks go by, maybe a couple months, and it seems like you can still maybe find a bridge. Mm-hmm. But a year, two or three go by, it's really hard to maybe get comfortable being as vulnerable as it takes to try to initiate sex with your partner.
Right. It really does.
And I've been there. You know, full disclosure, a couple relationships ago, really early on in my clinical career, I was in a relationship where we had very, very, very different sex drives. And I was the person that definitely was the higher sexual desire, which shocks no one who's familiar with me. And my partner just was someone, and this is actually an important conversation. My partner was someone who really operated more from a spontaneous based desire. And what that meant was they weren't built for monogamy. They really preferred more novel, anonymous, spontaneous sexuality. Mm-hmm,
right.
But within a committed long-term relationship, that just wasn't erotic to them. And so... Mm-hmm. That's acceptable. It's just a very different thing, but really hard to manage when you're so attracted and drawn to your partner, and eroticism, sex are just part of your love language.
Right. And then it starts to really impact the way that you feel about yourself.
Of course.
About the relationship.
I didn't feel desirable. Right. And then I have all these people desiring me and hitting on me and in my DMs.
Because you're sexy.
Wait, what's that?
Because you're sexy.
Because I'm sexy. And it just becomes this thing where it's like I'm getting it from other sources, but the source I want it from so badly mm-hmm. is my partner. And that's also the person that I want to use sex to get closer and bond with. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I can't. Right. It's very hard to manage.
Right. How long was that relationship?
It was a couple years.
Uh-huh.
It was a couple years. And this began very early on. Mm. But because of the work I do, and again, this was very early on in my clinical career, I wanted to try to be better than that. And I wanted to try to pull out all the stops. And, mm-hmm. you know, lovingly, I got to a place where I realized this just isn't going to work for me. I feel too distant because we're not able to use sex as a way to really bond and stay close. Mm-hmm. And so I ended the relationship.
And I imagine that probably impacted the following relationship or in terms of
it then led to a higher anxiety mm-hmm. about us being sexually compatible
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
too much so, and that also started to burn away and erode at the next relationship because they were like, whoa, so much intensity around whether or not we're having sex and if I desire you. And so I had to really take time away from that and like recalibrate.
Mm-hmm. What happens so much in marriages too, and I can, this is a personal one too, is after a while, sometimes when you're having problems or you're not desiring your partner, sometimes you'll just give in and say, okay, I'll have sex with you, but it's not connected sex.
Right.
It's, I'm not looking at you. In fact, I'm going to watch Netflix and, or look at my phone while I'm having sex with you. Like, you know, there's that disconnected sex too, which I also think is not great either. You know?
So did you and your
my ex-husband?
Yeah, was he picking up on the fact that like, wow, you're so just not present to
that? I, you know, because at some point the relationship was falling apart
right.
behind his addiction and emotional abuse, and then after a while it was like, look, okay, you want to have sex? That's fine. I'm just gonna catch up on some of my shows. You can just.
I'm going to multitask. Mama's got a lot of stuff to do, but I'm here for you. So have your way with me.
Yeah.
But again, how miserable for both of you.
Definitely.
So for me, if we start talking about, well, then what, like for people that are listening, they're thinking, okay, I'm in those scenarios, but I don't necessarily want to have the relationship end. Like me and you are both saying it did
right,
for us.
Right.
Because it doesn't always have to go that way. Right.
Right.
Although sometimes it does have to, right? Where it's just too much of an issue because some people, eroticism and sex is part of their primary way of connecting or their, let's say,
absolutely.
Their love language.
Right.
And that's just got to be a deal breaker. But for other people, I mean, the way I always try to work with it is a couple things. One of the things I say all the time is I so respect if someone's not in the mood for, well, I say it two ways. On one hand, I don't want people to have sex they don't want to have, right? Because I don't think it's really good to like just like force your body into that. But I also do at the same time, as opposite of that as it sounds, I am okay if you're with someone you care about, you feel safe with, and it's consensual to try to be present to some kind of sexuality.
Yes, yes, I agree with that.
Right? 100%. It's okay to do things you don't want to do, right?
Right.
So it's about finding that middle ground. Like maybe you aren't in the mood for penetration, but what might you be in the mood for that can be connective, affectionate-based, or sexuality-based?
Right, I agree. And the idea of putting, you know, behavior before feelings.
Yes.
So what would it look like if I were desiring you? What would it look like if I felt connected to you and engage in that sort of behavior? And it's in service of the relationship of the couple.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's also why I try to stress the importance in early dating of really exploring sexual compatibility mm-hmm. so as to not fall in love, attach, maybe even have children, buy a house, move in, and then somehow think magically we'll figure it out after all of that.
Right.
When we're so deeply in.
Right.
Right?
Well, you hear that all the time. People do think magically it'll just get better.
It'll figure itself out or it won't matter.
Right.
Okay. We're doing couples therapy right now with Rebecca Shida. Coming up next, we're going to continue the conversation around what to do if you're in a relationship with disparate desire. Listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And so we're doing couples therapy right now. We're sitting down and talking with Rebecca Ashida about disparate desire. So it's really common, and I see it a lot in my practice. And then I have people in my practice that are in marriages or relationships from 3, 5, or plus years, and they're thinking, oh my God, I can't imagine another year without having sexual desire coming at me.
I feel like if you don't have the sexual desire in the beginning, that's really challenging
to
maintain or keep that going or even get it later.
I agree. It's rare that it spontaneously shows up from some other source. But and that's why I say to people, like, have sex sooner than later, because it's a necessary level to explore, and you got to explore it at some point.
Right.
And some people delay it.
Well, also because religion or other things or
slut shaming,
people
being afraid of being seen as like a sex addict, sexism.
You got to see the goods too. We have to know what's happening there.
I mean, that's one of the powerful lessons I learned.
Right.
You know what I mean? So those are kind of the tips then, I guess, I give people, is really try to explore sexual compatibility on the front end of the relationship to just see if you guys are meant to be in a sexual romantic relationship. Maybe you're not. Maybe you are meant to just be friends. Or you'll realize, we'll never really have the sexual life I wanted. And for some people, they'll say that's okay because of everything else this relationship will give me. But I want you to at least know what you're getting into.
Right, right.
And then down the road, if you're not interested in sex, like, just see what kind of form of sexuality you might be interested in, so you can offer
massage,
something.
Touch.
100%. There's so much you can
so
do.
So many things to explore. Yeah. And I think that and that whole reward system that I was talking about, it's really a great idea if people can get out of that and kind of see sex as a part of a relationship versus like, if you do this and you've taken me on this date and you've courted me in just the right way and done all the right things, and now you get, you know, oral sex or something. You know, it's like,
is it like a chart on the wall where it's like, you do this, you get this,
like a
you
chore
do this,
list,
you
right?
get this, and I can choose for, it's like when you play a game at the fair
like
and there's points with like what kind of size stuffed animal you get. Like, taking out the trash only gets you oral, but if you take out the trash and clean the bathroom, you get anal.
Right.
Like, you work your way up in a point system to more, you know, more explicit kinds of sexuality. So, you know, relationship and parenting are often, and tell me what you think of this, are often two of the more powerful relationships where we really get to kind of see like what our work is. And I just want people to check in on, is your low sex drive based on the fact that you just aren't as interested in sex, or is it something else? Is it...
Right. I know with having, I have two kids, and I know that before having children, I love sex. I enjoy sex. Everyone wants to know that. But basically, once you have children, your body, especially your breasts, you know, for me, they become like, you know, the food for your kid.
Oh, so de-eroticized,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. And so it's so strange after a while, like you're here, you know, I'm breastfeeding my kid and then I'm being sexual with my husband at the time. And it just felt so strange to kind of move those roles and shift. And you do see a lot of that come up with people who are new parents, and they feel strange. Like,
I can't imagine trying to transition.
Like, you know, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's like, that came out of my vagina, and now here I am having sex with you. Or now you're breastfeeding, let me put you down for a nap. Okay, let's go have sex. And then use my breasts in a sexual way. It's a very, you have to really switch gears.
So let me ask you that. What would you say was most powerful in helping you transition out of that? Just time away from your body being used in service of nurturance for your children? Time?
And also just even once again reclaiming your own sexuality and the idea that it's almost a bit of a compartmentalization. Like, I'm like, I was the vessel for my child and mom over here, but over here I am a sexual being. I still remain a sexual being and being more connected to that. But it does take time sometimes away, especially because you're healing and, you know, it physically, it's, it can be but challenging.
I want to try to encourage or support people in maybe bringing that forward.
Absolutely.
Because just hearing you say that was so empathy building for me, because it's really hard for, I can think of that conceptually, but hearing you say it and explain it and witnessing it helped. Mm-hmm. And so I'd want to support partners in sharing that with their partners.
Yes.
And letting them really see and hear and dialogue more about like what the experience is versus just saying like, no, or I'm not in the mood, or that turns me off.
Right.
Because that's really powerful.
Right. And I probably because it's new, especially new parents, it's new to them to feel those feelings that they maybe never thought they were going to feel. It probably makes it more difficult to then share it with their partner. Like,
yeah,
it's really strange for me for you to touch my breasts because, you know, baby Ethan just was on them or whatever. It's probably a little bit difficult sometimes to have that conversation, I imagine, too. So
interesting. Powerful. Yeah. All right. So do the digger deeping and try to really sit with yourself and say, why is it that maybe I'm not comfortable with my body or my sexuality or my partner? Is it a relational issue that I just don't feel safe with them and I shouldn't? Is it that my body doesn't feel as erotic to me and I need to take time? Is it that I just have some body shame and I don't feel comfortable with my body being engaged? Because a lot of times there can be some underlying issues that can be worked through.
Right.
And acknowledge that, like, this isn't forever.
Right.
Just need some work. Some work needs to be done, some time.
And even without having babies, you know, as your body changes, as we've talked about before,
it makes
it more difficult sometimes, especially certain positions maybe you're not comfortable with.
That's right.
You know, it makes you feel like ashamed sometimes. And that probably stops people from maybe engaging as well. So,
yeah, beautifully said. Rebecca Ishida, thank you as always. Where can people find you?
They can find me at RebeccaIshida.com and my Instagram is HungryBecca.
Love it. And of course, she'll be back with us next Thursday for some more couples therapy. Question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page, as always. So weigh in on that. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show. Coming up next, though, we're going to slide into those DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and Radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time for some DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore that world with confidence. All right, here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris, my brother's got woman problems, and I just don't know what to suggest. Oh, I feel for you. I don't think he could have found himself a more dangerous woman with more flags than this. She doesn't work, says she can't. She's been married 3 times and lives with a 4th. She's broke, needs a visa, has health problems, and there's more. I just can't remember the rest. He wants to marry her, but of course he's worried. I know he loves her, and they do seem to really genuinely get along, but I just sense trouble down the road. How do you suggest I go about this? Honestly, I say this with all the love in my heart, I suggest you mind your own business. Because when you tell me that he loves her and they have a genuine and they genuinely get along, that's okay. Because let me break down some of the red flags that aren't red flags. She's been married 3 times and lives with a 4th. Okay, we've all been in a multitude of relationships. And that's when someone says they've been married multiple times. I think you've been in multiple relationships. We all have. And you chose to take them as far as marriage. But that doesn't make you any more broken. That doesn't make you any less dateable or lovable. My God, should people that have been married multiple times because they keep trying to make long-term relationships work, they should never be dated again? And then you said she has health problems? Well, I hope that later in life, if I acquire a lot of health problems, that I don't then become a red flag. Like, again, that's outside of her control. She's broke. I would need more details about that. She needs a visa. Well, again, a lot of people do. That doesn't mean that their relationship's not genuine. But more importantly, I know I'm giving you a little tough love, but your brother's an adult. He's aware of these red flags. He loves her. She loves him. Let him lead his life. Most likely wouldn't really like you leaning in anyway and kind of bring that forward. He's aware of what's happening, you know? So I'm glad you're looking out for him, but I'm not as concerned as you are, you know? All right, Slide the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Church and Condoms. It's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about some misconceptions about sex positivity. It's a good thing, but we want to make sure y'all got it right. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got a question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is, dating would be so much easier if We're going to break that down later in the show and, of course, also do some Freak on the Streets. Why? It's Thursday night. But right now, it's time to talk about some misconceptions around sex positivity. Why is that important? Well, it's in the news a lot. It's also part of the cultural zeitgeist. Sex positivity is something a lot of people are working towards. And I throw it around a lot. I wrote two books. It's a powerful component of both the books, but also a core part of my activism. So sex positivity is the idea that we support sexuality as being legitimate in terms of an area of study, as a form of work, and also in terms of dialogue and conversation. It's basically just trying to normalize that sex isn't bad or scary. We can talk about it. We can encounter it. We can have it activated and around us in our lives. You know, there's a lot of people that are trying to roll us backwards away from that. They want us to be more covered, drop our tone, use the wrong wording. And that's just anxiety-based, that's fear-based, that's shame-based. And there's no reason to have shame around something that's really, really natural, but more importantly, very, very healthy and always present. And I've talked about this before. You know, our sexuality is everywhere. Our sexuality is what we choose to wear in the morning. Think about that. What we choose to put on is rooted in our sexuality, how we want to feel and be seen by others. My sexuality and your sexuality is how close we stand to someone in line. Our sexuality is eye contact we make or don't make. It's also things we notice in the world. It's how we carry ourselves. It's the way we talk. I mean, it's ever present. It's not something that's just that thing we do with a partner sometimes at home in our bedroom. And people can literally be having sex anywhere via their phones because they're sexting, they're looking at things, they're fantasizing. So sex is everywhere. But the sex positivity concept is often, not often, but it is sometimes weaponized and used to shame people. So let's really break down some of the misconceptions around sex positivity. So being sex positive does not mean that you're promiscuous. Now, I use that word because culture uses that word. I don't use that word. I don't like that word. It has a negative connotation because some people are very sexually confident and some people are hypersexual, and there's nothing wrong with that. But sex positive doesn't mean that you're necessarily having a lot of sex or sex with tons of people. I'm very sex positive, meaning I think sex is healthy. I study sex. Sex is a big part of my life. But I go through periods where I'm not having sexuality in my life, right? I've talked about this on air. After I came out of my last engagement, I went through a powerful phase of what was essentially asexuality. I just wasn't interested in engaging in sex with others. And my own sexuality with myself was really kind of quieted down and tampered down. Now, I knew enough to not panic. And I knew that most likely it was a phase for me. And I used other ways of building intimacy to stay connected to people. So I was still sex positive, though. I still would openly talk about it in ways that were appropriate. I was comfortable having other people exhibit and live in a way where with theirs being, you know, very overt. I didn't shame it. I didn't talk problematically about it, but it wasn't something that was necessarily really active in my life. Another misconception about sex positivity is some people think that it means that you're polyamorous, open relationships, always having threesomes. No. Sex positivity can be someone who's in a monogamous relationship. Monogamy is a really healthy choice for some people in terms of their relational style and configuration. There's nothing inherently wrong about that, right? Sex positivity means we consider all options and we choose which is right for us. And for some people, that means monogamy, and that's okay. Another powerful one that's very personal for me is sex positivity does not mean you're always down to have sex. Now, let me tell you all a personal story. A couple years ago, I was doing PR for a TV show that I was on, and I was in studio. I was going on a really famous person's talk show, and the producer was like, hey, you know, I just like live down the street from here. And I was, I don't know, it was really early in the morning, so I'm not usually this naive. And I was like, that's cool. I didn't have no understanding why they're telling me this. And they're like, yeah, so like, just like right down the street. And I was like, wait a minute. You think I'm gonna have sex with you? I was like, I don't even know you. I haven't even spoken. And they literally thought that because I talk openly about sex, I'm sex positive, that I am just free for all with whoever. And that ties into the next one. Being sex positive doesn't mean you don't have boundaries. Like, you can be very sexually confident. You can look very sexualized and still have boundaries where you choose who and when and how you have sex and the kind of sex you have. Being sex positive does not mean whenever, wherever, with whoever, without any kind of consciousness to that. But some people think that, right? Sex positivity also doesn't always mean that you don't have some struggles. And that also comes up for me just professionally, where people think, well, because of the work you do, Dr. Chris, you must never have any body shame or anxiety. You must never have any, you know, struggles within sexuality or relationships. Well, of course I do. I'm a person. And what I want for everyone else is what I hope, you know, hold myself accountable to, that I do a little bit better Things have a little less severity. I catch them sooner. I handle them in a healthier way. But I still have moments where I'm struggling with body dysmorphia and I don't feel the most desired or sexual. I still have times where my relational or sexual confidence is kind of low. I still have times in relationships where I'm struggling to be my best. And so sex positive doesn't mean you've got it down. You're always feeling hot in your body. You're always ready for sex. You never have any questions or concerns. I mean, I continually I'm working on myself around my body, my sexuality. And so I have these powerful moments that are very healthy because they're normalizing where I realize, wow, you know, I'm still in the work myself and we all have a lot of work to do. So remember that sex positivity doesn't mean you are beyond ever having an issue or struggle. The goal is never perfection. Mental health is not about perfection. It's not. Mental health is just about self-awareness, realizing what your work is in the world and actively engaging in that. Right? Being authentic, letting your vulnerability be out there, letting people see your flaws and your struggles and owning them, but trying to be better than that. But it's not about perfection. And so just know that when someone tries to shame you at sex positivity, thinking, well, if you're sex positive, you'd be, you know, kinky. Well, no, again, sex positivity sometimes also means being vanilla because it's truly just about choice, confidence and choice, realizing that every option is healthy. There's a lot of diverse, creative ways of being sexual, but I get to decide for me what's right, and I support everyone else's. And as producer Jeffrey loves to say, to nauseam sometimes, don't yuck someone's yum. Just because you're not into it doesn't mean you have to call it bad, gross, or disgusting. It's just not something that you do. You know what I mean? Let people get their jollies. You know what I mean? Y'all do you. That's the Love Line way. Mind your biz. All right. Coming up next, we're going to be doing a little Freak on the Streets and then Question the Night. So get on our Love Line IG page and weigh in on that. You are listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com. Love Line.
Love Line. Love Line. Love Line. Love Line. Love Line. Love Line. Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. We're back. And our Question of the Night is up on our Love Line IG page. Tonight's question is, dating would be so much easier if, can't wait to hear what y'all gotta say, if we just didn't have to do it. Oh, it's gonna get real, but right now it's time for some Freak on the Streets.
Freak on the Streets.
That always gives me a little bit like 70s disco vibe. Like my body starts doing like a little 70s move when I hear that intro, right?
Freak on the Streets.
Right? It's like bam, bam. Okay, anyway, what do we got?
What is the borderline of just wanting sex normally and being a sex addict?
Oh, he said the SA word. Well, those that are loyal Loveline listeners or Dr. Chris fans, we know that sex addiction is not a real thing. It's actually been debunked by every single mental health and psychiatric organization, the American Psychiatric Association, American Psychological Association, ASEC, the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, which is the group that certifies sex therapists and educators around the world. Also, Sexual Health Alliance, SHAW, which is I'm the clinical director of education for. We've debunked it. So none of these organizations, including the diagnostic manual, they've rejected it. So it's not a diagnosis, which means it's not a real thing in the mental health world, which means you can't even bill for it. You can't diagnose someone with it because it's not considered real. Nonetheless, there's people that use it enough where people believe it's real. There's not even a consistent universal operational definition for it. So when someone who uses that word uses it, they're making up their own definition because there's not a resource that everyone has studied or is utilizing with an agreed upon definition. So it's really left up to the values and judgments of the therapist or person slinging it around. And we're very familiar with it because movies have been made, journalists reference it, and people just assume it's a real thing. But again, all the major organizations have rejected it and it's not a diagnosis, so we can't even ethically apply to someone. But yet there's people that are sex addiction therapists that unethically are using it as a diagnosis, and that's just it's sexual and emotional abuse to call someone that. Because often what we're really saying is the sex you're having is something I'm uncomfortable with. Now, those that say, oh, but you know, I know someone has a lot of sex. Well, some people are hypersexual. Some people also have a lot of downtime. But, you know, you can't use the addiction model for something that's always operating on us like hunger or sexuality. You know, you don't see people having sex in the cereal aisle of Whole Foods because it can sometimes feel difficult to control it, but you do have the capacity. People are able to stop long enough to go to the supermarket. But yet, you know, with drugs and alcohol, you'll see people high or drunk at the supermarket, at work. But, you know, you've never gone to work and seen someone, you know, masturbating in the hallway or someone having sex at the airport, you know, getting their ticket. But you'll see people people drunk and high, right? Because there's a distinction. People can be compulsively sexual where they are kind of, you know, binging on it, but they're doing it with partners they feel comfortable with and they're stopping, you know, at certain times in appropriate cases. And so again, that's a whole nother show. We actually did a full Loveline episode around it. So dig through. I don't know where it was, but we did a Loveline Presents and the whole show is dedicated to that. But your question is the distinction, though, I'll reframe it, between healthy sex and unhealthy sex. It's a really difficult one to unpack because, again, a lot of it's rooted in judgment and morals. But healthy sex is sex that's consensual, right? We already know that. Healthy sex also is sex that makes you walk away feeling good. I want people to have sex with people and to engage in sex acts so they walk away feeling at least neutral, if not nourished and better. I tell people, don't have sex you don't want to have, and don't have sex with people where you walk away feeling worse about yourself, your body, what you just did. It's something that should be enhancing, nourishing. Sex should be fun. It's kind of like dessert. Don't eat dessert you don't want to eat. It's supposed to be a happy addition to your life. So really weigh in on that. I tell people to think about that. Why am I wanting to have sex? Is it because I'm bored? Is it because I'm lonely? Because remember, being sex positive is about recognizing sex has many ways to be utilized. Sex can be for self-soothing because you had a rough day. Sex can be used like meditation and yoga because it's also a right brain activity and it's an important form of self-soothing and self-care. Sex can be used for entertainment purposes, for fun. Sex can be used for a job, for employment. It can be used for intimacy building. It can be used as a way to connect to someone. Multitude of ways we use it, right? Just kind of check in on the purpose, you know. But healthy sex is a really hard word to define. That's why I usually just say it's consensual and it's something that's rooted in what you are comfortable with and something that makes you feel good. But it's really, we really need to stay away from judging other people's sex lives because usually it's just us saying, I'm uncomfortable with the kind of sex you're having or how much you're having, and it's really my issue, but I'm going to pathologize and shame you for it, you know? But it's a great question, and we're going to keep talking about that topic, so thank you for asking. Coming up next, question of the night. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and it is that time. Question of the night.
Question of the night.
All right, not going to lie, that theme music, it makes me do a little shoulder move, but like it's not quite the way I feel about the Freak on the Streets disco moment. All right, tonight's question was, dating would be so much easier if cishet men were better, more kind, and communicated more. Bam. Wait, why is that so funny? Why are you laughing at that?
Because it's real.
Someone else said dating would be so much easier if I didn't work 12 hours a week, 5 to 6 days. I'm sorry, if I didn't work 12 hours a day, 5 to 6 days a week. Yo, I feel your pain. I'm pulling 14-hour days, 5 to 6 days a week. Actually, sometimes no days off when I'm traveling doing the lecturing, so I feel your pain. Makes dating real hard. Also, if you're trying to do some long distance business, but that's for another day. We'll get real on that one another day. Okay, dating would be so much easier if people didn't play silly games. Ding, 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 ding. That's kind of what my brain goes immediately. There are so many games of manipulation that goes out there, which is why I'm always giving the advice, stop playing games, date authentically. Neither model is necessarily always going to give you what you want, but you got to pick a model, and the best working model is to be authentic, be vulnerable, show up to those you're interested in, show signs of interest, don't chase, don't play games, just be real and honest, you know? Someone else said, wait, this is amazing. I love this answer. Dating would be so much easier if I stopped hating people. Why? Yes. Yes, it would. Yeah, it would. You got to soften. Look, being a human in the world in all different kinds of relationships, it can harden us. It can toughen us. I'm there with you. I empathize. But every time you have a relational wound or trauma, you have to tell yourself, soften. I have to stay soft. I have to stay open. Someone else said, dating would be so much easier if people were honest. I mean, can I get like 5,000 amens on that one? If people are honest, I know.
Yeah, squeeze.
Thank you. It's one of the bigger struggles, right? You don't know where you're at or what you want or you don't know where you're at or what they want because they don't tell you, right? Okay, dating would be so much easier if more people were open about open relationships. Do you mean open about that they're in them and are having them, or open about their desire for them, or open about the health and possibility in them? But I like where you're going with that one. Someone else said dating would be so much easier if communication was used like the old days. Ghosting and lack of communication sucks. I know. Ghosting is like one of the most horrible things that has come up in like technological culture, right?
Double ghosting.
Double ghosting. I mean, yeah, let's get real for a minute, dude. Ghosting's bad, but you know it's far worse? Double ghosting. And here on Loveline, we coined a new word for that. It's called getting haunted. Okay, when you get double ghosted, you get haunted. Someone double ghosted me. I think I was selling that online. They literally ghosted and then swooped back in long enough away from the ghosting that it still remained having been a ghosting, and then brought me back in, my naive butt, at the wrong moment. I was just a wounded little animal, and I connected, and then ghosted me again. I got haunted. It's not even Halloween yet, you know? Dating would be so much easier if, people were more respectful and thoughtful. Yeah, thank you, goals. Dating would be so much easier if you could just be yourself and enjoy each other instead of adhering to all these unspoken rules and expectations. Yeah, dating honest and authentically, right? Wearing what you wear, going to the kind of places you go, and just being yourself, not trying to impress people. No games needed, right? If you want someone to like you for who you are, and so it's like we got to be who we are. Someone else said dating would be so much easier if people were like apps in the App Store, version history, rating, and criticisms. Oh, man, I don't know. That would cause some problems. I wonder what my my version history rating and criticisms would be. Somehow I'm really all about the version history part though. Someone said people were brutally honest about their interest in one another. I know. Someone said if humans purred.
Okay.
I'm a cat owner, so I'm very comfortable and familiar with such things. So I'm on board. I'm not purring. Dating would be so much easier if people didn't have those immediate judgments. Agreed? If there was an official organization that could certify your skills and qualities. I'm sorry, I'm going to need to see your certification before I continue this courtship and flirting with you. That's kind of amazing. You have to go get certified. Oh, man. What does that application look like, you know? Dating was so much easier if everyone just said what they were wanting and feeling. Yeah, I know. I mean, that's kind of where it really lands for me, is it really just goes back to people being forthcoming and honest and vulnerable and saying, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I'm wanting. This is how I'm feeling. Where are you with this? There shouldn't be a need for so much secrecy in game playing. I don't know, but y'all made me laugh tonight. Thank you. That purring one especially is going to be trapped in my head. All right, y'all. So coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Guess what, y'all? We're coming up on Channel Q's one-year anniversary. So, you know, we like a good party. We're going to celebrate. So in support of National Coming Out Day, which is also the one-year anniversary of Channel Q, we are going to fly you and a friend out to the home of Channel Q, LA, right here in California. We're going to give you a weekend getaway. So we're going to take you out in West Hollywood for a happy hour at the world famous Abbey. We're going to put you up in an amazing hotel and give you two tickets to LA's biggest event of the year. It's the We Can Survive concert at the Hollywood Bowl. This concert's got everybody. Taylor Swift, Lizzo, the Jonas Brothers, tons more. And we're going to celebrate Coming Out Day and National Coming Out Day in LA. I'm sorry, just doubled that. We're going to celebrate Channel Q's coming out and also National Coming Out Day. So go to wearechannelq.com to enter and win. Do it. Wearechannelq.com, enter, win. Yo, we might all roll in there for those cocktails. I'm not mad at that. I'll come by the Abbey. I'll pull up. I got some dance moves to bust out. I never turned down something like that. Wearechannelq.com, enter and win. All right, y'all. It's time now to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. All right, here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris, I was wondering how important it is to vocalize your disagreements about non-relationship topics. I disagree with my girlfriends a lot about various things, and every time I'm not on her side, she gets really upset with me. I think it's normal to have different opinions on things that don't immediately affect the relationship, but she doesn't see it that way. If I disagree with something, should I just keep it to myself? Or is there something I can do to make her more understanding that just because I don't agree with her doesn't mean I'm trying to fight or don't value her? Definitely don't keep disagreements to yourself, because what you're doing in that moment is missing out on really building intimacy and connection, because that's a lot of times when that can happen. And also, you know, both of you miss out on really learning and growing, right? Hopefully when someone exerts an opposing opinion, it can challenge you to either strengthen your current opinion, or you can be open to maybe seeing something different or seeing something differently where you're holding on to how you thought before, but you're adding new elements to it, right? I mean, I say this all the time. I'm always trying to change and grow with my perspective on things. And so some things I might have said last year, I'll say something completely different next year. I said that on my book tour. I was like, hey, my next book might challenge everything I just said, because I'm always trying to develop my thoughts and opinions, and they understandably change based on time and experience. So there's something really powerful and beautiful in that. So please don't keep that to yourself, because that really limits also the depth of which your relationship can go to, right? Imagine what that would look like when you're relating to each other. It'd be so superficial. You'd just be talking about, gosh, the weather and what's happening on the TV show you're watching. I mean, very, very boring, very shallow. So absolutely share that. And also, I think sometimes if you're aware of someone's triggers and you know you're going to be walking into it, frame what you're about to say. Hey, I know this might be really difficult to hear, or hey, I wanted to share something with you that I think you sometimes think very differently about. Are you open to hearing it? You kind of get their permission, or you get them to agree that they're going to be calm and open to it. That's kind of the way you baby step them into really being open to what you're saying. But when someone says something, is there something I can do to make someone dot, dot, dot? I never engage in that, because it's never about making people different. She's allowed to be how she is. It's really about accepting how she is and finding different ways to kind of present what you're trying to present. But there's no magic way to change the way someone's being. She would have to be open to trying to be different in these, you know, oppositional conversations. And so the work kind of falls on you, but absolutely don't keep it yourself. You know, but I also love the idea of sharing with people what it's like to be in a relationship with them. So I think there's also space to say, hey, you know, sometimes I try to share with you my thoughts, and it's not always the way you see things. It seems like that's really difficult for you. Is there a way I can better approach that? You know, kind of make it like a team effort, because in all relationships, there should be some level of cooperation and team building, because you want to stay together. You know what I mean? People want to be heard. Yeah, there we go. All right, y'all. Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. That's our show. Y'all have an awesome weekend. Do tons of self-care. Kick in some pleasure and a little bit of leisure time. Be back on Monday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern. And as always, we are podcasted at wearechannelq.com. So check us out. As always, thanks for hanging out with me. Have an awesome weekend and have a great night.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.